The other thing I'm going to do, in addition to recording this call, is I'm going to put all of you on mute. Now, during this call, if you want to participate in the call, all you need to do is hit *61, and that will have you raise your hand. And it will electronically raise your hand. So in front of me, I have a list of all the people that are on the call, your phone numbers, when you join the call, and when you leave the call. So any time during this call, if you'd like to make a comment, just hit *61 on your phone, and a little hand pops up next to your phone number on my computer. Now, after a while, I'll call on you as soon as I can, but if you decide you don't want to speak, you can just hit *61, and it will lower your hand. What I ask that you do on today's conference call is interact with me as if it were just you and I on the phone. Now, I realize that you won't talk quite as much as you would if it was just you or me, but if you listen as if it were just you and I on the phone, I think you will listen in a new way. And that's what I'm asking you to do, is really participate with this conversation like we were sitting down talking with each other. And your job here is not to listen to me like a teacher, but rather to interact with this information with your inventor's hat on, with your creativity hat on. So what you do today is to look to see how you can be more effective as a leader. Is there something that you can do in your day-to-day work, whether it's your leadership at work, maybe it's your leadership in the community, for many of you, it's your leadership at home or with your group of friends or in your church, wherever it is that you lead, I'd like you to look today with your creativity hat on and say, what can I do to lead more effectively? And then I'd like you to write it down. Now, I'm going to give you several opportunities throughout this call to write and then to speak. As I mentioned, you can speak at any time just by letting me know you want to speak by raising your hand with *61. But at any other time, I'll give you these opportunities. And I want you to write. And the purpose for writing before you speak and as you're inventing is so that you capture your best thinking. Writing slows your mind down. And writing gives your eyes something to see as well as your ears something to hear right now. We're going to focus today on using coaching skills, the kind of coaching skills that life coaches learn, kind of coaching skills that leadership coaches and leadership consultants learn. We're going to focus on those and see how you can apply those in leadership so that you'll more effectively resolve conflicts with people, you'll more effectively assist others to solve problems, even motivate people around you, maximize your contribution and effectively assist others to contribute more. So that's where we're headed. Now, I realize that the purpose of a coach and a leader, they're different. And there are some similarities. So I'm not starting this by saying that they're the same job. I don't think they are. For example, in coaching, the agenda is really set by the client. But as the leader, I'm recommending that you set the agenda, that you really look to see where are we headed. That's your job as a leader. What is it that you want? What is it that you want that you're willing to ask other people to want? Also, in coaching, the client makes the final call. The client is the person who says, yes or no, I'm going this way or that. But in leadership, I see that that's you. When you're leading a group, whether you're appointed that leader or whether you've just assumed that leadership, I think it's up to you to weigh all the options and make the final call. But in coaching, the client does that. And then, of course, at work in leadership, the leader pays. The leader hires the employee. But in coaching, the client pays. So there are differences here, but I think there are some skills that are very overlapping. And I'm going to review those skills. I'm going to give a quick list of them. And then I'm going to return to each one of these skills and define them a little more fully. And then ask you to look to see, for each one of these skills, where you're using it effectively and where you could improve. So that's the overview of where we're headed. going to start with the first skill that I think is the number one skill of a great coach and one of the most important skills of a great leader, and that's listening. Then we're going to move on to the skill of assisting other people to get what they want, to get clear about what they want. First of all, to help people get clear about what they want. Certainly that is the main skill of a coach and a very important skill of a leader. Then we're going to talk about the skill of facilitating problem solving or developing detailed action plans. So once somebody knows what they want, then how do they get there? Or in other words, once they know what their problem is, how do they get it solved? Then we're going to move on to the skill of mediating relationship struggles. Then the skill of getting people to celebrate, which is a skill of motivation. And then we're going to talk a little bit about confidence, the ability of a coach and a leader to display confidence. So those are the skills that I'm suggesting are overlapping and important for both of those professions to adopt. Now I want to start with the first one, and then I'll hear from you in a minute. First skill is the skill of listening. And I'm not talking about the standard kind of listening that you've maybe heard about or read about or practiced. I'm talking about a radical listening. I'm talking about soulful listening or extreme listening. You can use all those kind of words, but for now, let's just talk about it as radical listening, because that's the kind of listening that I think a leader needs, that a leader needs in order to do her work most effectively. Now, I'm not just suggesting listening to the people that you lead. Of course, that's important. I'm also suggesting listening to the people that you serve. And I suggested listening to the world at large, because that's how I think leaders determine where to go. You determine where to go by observation, by absorbing what's needed, what's missing, what's called for in the world. And that requires this kind of radical listening that I'm recommending. Well, the skills of listening, of course, I know many of you know them, you've practiced them, and I'm suggesting that you turn them up way high in your leadership. The first skill of listening is to keep your mouth closed until the other person is complete. Now, I know that this is not the way some of you have been trained. Actually, some of you have been trained to listen by talking a lot. I'm recommending something different. I'm recommending actually being quiet and providing a vacuum into which people speak. Now, it's a vacuum that is very safe. It's a very safe container. So that another skill is that you're constantly affirming the other person. You're constantly affirming what you hear. Doesn't mean you agree with it, but you're affirming the other person's right to have that opinion. You're affirming how great it is for you to know that the other person has that opinion or that belief or that desire. So you're listening until the other person is complete while constantly affirming. Now, I realize that a few of you have been trained to listen by asking a lot of questions, and I want to challenge that for a while and recommend that you actually not listen that way. I realize that once in a while a question can be well placed in listening, but I think the questions are way overrated. And more often than not, the question actually gets in the way of listening by hearing the sender, by guiding the sender in a way that is not where you want the sender to go. So that's what I'm recommending that you do, is listen in this new radical way, that just keep your mouth shut for a long time, providing this safe container and listening until the other person's complete. Now, how do you know when they're complete? They stop talking. Amazing. Now you think, well, but I could maybe, some people, they'll just talk and talk and talk. They could talk for 10, 15, 20 minutes. Say, yep, they could. And that's the kind of listening, the radical listening that I'm recommending that you do. At one point, you might even ask, well, what else? What else do you want to say? so that there's a time when you not only listen and listen, but then when they stop, instead of just jumping in now and speaking what you have to say, you pull whatever's left. You act like a vacuum, a safe container into which they fully disclose themselves. And then you ask for it. You ask for that full disclosure. And when you find something that they're saying that's interesting, you keep it to yourself and postpone your response until later. Because otherwise, you'll tend to steal the topic or piggyback on them, take what they're saying and run with it. Now, you might even have some contradictions. I'm recommending that you postpone those contradictions and wait until it's your turn to speak, which is only after you fully absorb the other for a long time. So that's a quick review of listening, this kind of radical listening I'm recommending. I realize that some of you may or may not even agree with that style of listening. But those are my ideas. Again, I present them not as a teacher telling you what to do, but as a co-inventor asking you to see how you could use this in your life. So in a minute, that's what I want to hear. I want to hear from you. I'd like to hear, first of all, where do you now use listening in your leadership that's effective? I'd also like to hear from you about how you could improve your listening. How could you improve your leadership through listening? So those are the two questions. Where do you now listen in your leadership effectively, and where don't you listen, but you could, and improve your leadership? Now, before I listen to you, I'd like to have you write, because even though I won't be able to hear all of you directly, I think by you writing, it's like you're sending. So you've now been listening for almost 15 minutes. I'd like you to send back to me, first of all, by writing, and then I'll turn it over for you to speak. I'll be quiet now for 45 seconds while you write. If you're listening to the recording of this call, please do the same thing. And don't just think your response for 45 seconds, but literally pick up a pencil or a pen and take out paper and write. Where have you been listening in your leadership effectively, and where could you add it? Please begin now. All right, so I'd like to hear from several of you. Please hit *61 on your phone, and your hand will electronically raise. As soon as I take you off mute, just say your first and last name and where you're calling from, and then whatever it is you want to say.
Hi, this is Cindy Cannon in Atlanta, Georgia. I started listening just recently because I'm always talking as a recruiter. And I found that if I shut up from the first time a sound comes out, I do really well, and I spend my time trying to answer that person silently, and I lose my thoughts. So that is something that I'm working on, is to try not to answer for them and to wait to the end.
That's great, Cindy. That's great. And a lot of times what I notice is that when I listen, I do lose my thought. And I think, great, because my next thought is probably going to be a better thought, because I will have heard more of what was said. Now, the other thing that I believe that really facilitates listening is to take notes. So I'm recommending for all of you in your leadership positions or in any position where you really want to listen well, is say to the person you're listening to, you know, you're saying a lot here, and if you don't mind, I'd like to jot a few notes down so I don't forget it. Now, a few people will be distracted by that, but most people will really be complimented, because what they are saying is so important that you're writing it down. Thanks, Cindy. Next person, just say your name and where you're calling from and whatever comment you have.
Hi, this is Pam. And I have some pretty dramatic results, and I'll try to just make it almost punchline instead of the big story. One thing I've been doing is I've been switching from saying something to get attention to only saying things when it's going to contribute. And that has made a huge difference when I'm interacting with men especially. It's just amazing that all the attention I used to crave or the acknowledgement and never seemed to be able to get, I now get by saying very, very little. But when I say it, it really counts. And
wow.
And also, I was in the iPhone line for 5 hours trying to get an iPhone. And without going into the whole story of why, when I got up there after 5 hours, I couldn't get it, I spoke to the guy. And, you know, there's all these reasons why you can't have them hold it because they have to sell it. They can't sell it until you have an AT&T account, blah, blah, blah. It's just amazing rules about no. And so what I did is instead of arguing with him or trying to get sympathy for that 5 hours I spent, I just repeated back to him what he said was his no. So I clarified his no. And I at the end I just said, so my 5 hours is in vain. And that's all I said. And he said, I'm sorry, it is. And then somebody called back from the iPhone store the next day, and they said they were going to make a one-time exception that has never been done before, and no other store is ever doing it, and no one can do it, and don't tell anybody about this because they're going to save it for me. So it was, like, so cool because I didn't use, like, you know, begging or pleading or being mad or I didn't use anything. I just listened to him explain to me why I couldn't have it.
Yes. Well, and you used another skill, Pam, which is one we're going to talk about in a few minutes, in terms of assisting people in conflict, which is that you fed back what you heard. And I claim that whenever you are in a relationship struggle, whenever any of you are in a relationship struggle, whether it's directly with another person or you're mediating that, if you just get people to feedback what they've heard to each other, it goes a long, long ways to resolving that conflict, and that's what you did. But I also really, I want to come back and mention something else, Pam, that you said, which is right off the bat, the way that you improved your listening and your speaking was to switch your intention from getting attention, contributing to another.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right, like to hear from somebody else? Go ahead and say your name and where you're calling from.
Peter Chandonnet, San Francisco, California.
Hi, Peter.
Hi, Dave. So where I find that I do well by listening is in my coaching relationships, and where I find sometimes struggling is in my partnership with my partner. And in my family relationships, when you know folks and family specifically are talking with health issues or financial issues, you know I seem to get a little bit more hooked and want for them to solve the problem, and oftentimes find myself getting involved in trying to fix their problem as opposed to stepping back and, you know, assuring them they can have what they want and or asking the question of what it is that they want.
Yeah. So I'll bet that Peter's not just speaking for himself, which is that particularly with family members or with people you're really close to, it's harder to listen. And one of the ways that we get in our own way of listening is to try and fix the other person. So listening is not the time to give people advice. Of course, listening is a time to absorb what the other person wants and to really postpone any advice, postpone any answers, because when we give other people answers, that very seldom assists them to problem solve. Very seldom does that assist them to develop their own action plans. And for sure, it's not listening. So there maybe is a time for advice. There maybe is a time to help people solve their problem, but it's not when we're listening to them. When we're listening to them, it's just the time to listen. Thanks, Peter. And next, go ahead.
Bob Zarin, Greenberg.
Hi, Bob.
How are you, Dave?
I'm good. Good to hear from you.
Thanks. I do a lot of corporate training, and I think I'm pretty good at listening in person. I've practiced a lot over the years and really showing people that I'm listening by acknowledging that they've asked a good question and basically repeating the question so that they're hearing it again. But I find that it's a little bit more difficult to do on the telephone, and I was wondering if you could comment a little bit about the dynamic of listening on the phone as opposed to in person.
I think a lot of people are so visual that when they're on the phone, they don't have the same cues that they have when they're face-to-face. What I do when I'm talking to a person on the phone for any length of time is I have their picture in front of me. All my clients, I have a picture of them. Sometimes I have it a physical printout in their file. Sometimes it's up on my computer screen. When I do workshops and I get pictures of everyone in my workshops, and I'll put them up on my computer screen. So I actually have that visual cue. So that's one method that I use. Another is a lot of note-taking so that I know not only hear what that person says, but I actually can see it, because I write it down. Now, Bob, what you mentioned that you do that works well is you repeat what the other person is saying. You mentioned if they ask a question, you repeat it. But even, of course, if they just make a comment, you send it back. And that's part of the listening process. So I think you can not only do that on face-to-face, but, of course, you can do that on the phone. And sometimes on the phone, for me, it's even a little easier because I don't have that eye contact, so I can really put all of my attention on the notes I'm taking.
Very good, Bob. Thank you.
Please, all of you, continue to invent, look for ways. I want to hear one more comment and about how you use coaching or listening effectively in coaching, and then also we'll move on to the next topic. So please say your name and where you're calling from. Go ahead. This somebody from South Dakota raised his hand, and if you'd like to speak, you've got the floor.
Oh, good. This is Pat Geary from Rapid City.
Hi, Pat.
Hi. In my line of work where I deal with the public as much as I do, and then I still have staff, my biggest challenge when it comes to listening is finding the balance. Because when I am dealing with the public, I have to take control of the call, and I ask lots of questions, and I have to get to the answer really quickly. And sometimes when I meet with my employees, I want to handle that the same way, and you can't. And so that's my balance, is to remember then that it's time. So that's when I have to sit and listen and take notes and ask questions appropriately. So.
Yeah, Pat, thanks. Pat's in a line of work that's unusual in that she's got to communicate with people very quickly in emergency situations. And in those cases, of course, questions and taking control of the call is extremely important. That's unusual in terms of a listening situation, because most of the time we have the luxury to step back and take the time. And I think it's just great that you see the distinction and that you've learned that you've got those two different situations and they require two very different skill sets.
Well, something that you used to say a lot was stop, change, go, and you actually have to put that into practice. And when you listen to a caller, I have to listen for what's not being said. And when I'm dealing with an employee, then I have to listen very carefully for what is being said. So
yeah.
That's balance.
Yeah. Thank you, Pat. Now, that's one skill of a coach, but I want to go on because I think there's another very important skill that coaches have, that we teach coaches, and that leaders also can use, and that is assisting others to get clear about what they want. So I want you to think about your own coach, your own leadership now, whatever that is, whether it's at work, whether it's at home, whether it's in the community, wherever it is. And realize and look at how you can be with people so they get clearer and clearer about what they want. And where do you do that effectively, and where could you improve? Well, for years, what I've been teaching life coaches to do is listen and interact with people so they get clear about what they want in every area of life, for the rest of their life, and even beyond. And I recommend that for you as a leader, that you interview the people you serve, you interview the people you work with, you interview the world, the people that you're interested in leading and impacting and contributing to, and assist those people that you're interviewing to get clear about what they want. And what they want passionately, what they want deeply, what they're just crazy about having, what puts a smile on their face and a bounce in their step, what makes their heart sing. It's really, what do you want? Now, I think that the best way to get, help people get clear about what they want is to ask them. And ask them over and over and over again. And specifically, ask them what do they want, ask them when they want it, ask them where they want it, ask them with whom they want it. This is the same list that we talked about on the first of this series of leadership calls when I recommended that you do this for yourself. And that's how I think you can assist others to get clear. You ask them, and then you listen. Now I'm talking about a new kind of listening, though. I'm recommending now, not the same kind of listening that I just suggested, but a listening where you then speak back a little bit of what you heard, but only speaking back that part of what you heard when the person said what they wanted. So you ask them, what do you want? And they'll go, people will talk. First of all, they'll say they don't know, and then you just sit and you be quiet, and then they'll say something they want a little bit, and then you sit and be quiet, and then they'll say, well, I'm not sure, and then you say, well, what do you want? And then you be quiet, and they'll say what they don't want, and then you ask them again, and pretty soon they'll say what they do want, and every time they say that, you feed it back. You say, oh, yeah, it sounds like you want, but da-da-da-da-da. And then you look at their face, and if they light up, you know you got it right. And even if you get it wrong, it's okay if they say, no, I don't want that. I really want da-da-da-da-da-da. Say, oh, good. So you really want da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And they say, yes. You say, good, good. What else do you want? What I'm recommending as a leader is to assist other people to get really clear about what they want by asking them repeatedly what, when, where, and with whom they want, and then feeding it back to them. So that's a skill that I want you to now think about, again, for 45 seconds while I be quiet, and think about where in your leadership could you do more of that. And this time, please get specific. So on your paper, when I stop talking, write down, specifically where in your leadership do you now do a good job at asking people what they want and helping them get clear about it. But also write down where in your leadership you could improve in this area. And again, be as specific as possible. And then in 45 seconds, I want to hear from several of you. So now, please write. All right, please raise your hand. Let me know where are you doing this well and where could you improve? Or if you don't want to tell me that, just say something about this whole concept. Raise your hand with star 6-1. The idea here is for you as a leader to really help other people figure out what they want.
Dave?
Yeah.
Martha.
Hi, Martha.
My husband listening in with me, and immediately we said, boy, we need to do this with each other, especially as he's beginning to phase in retirement, and I'm looking at some different options for my line of work. And we don't do that very well with each other.
Wow. Well, congratulations for noticing it and being committed to change it, because this is a great way for couples to interact with each other. My wife and I do this several times a year where we formally sit down and we just talk about, okay, now what do we want now? And it goes like, what do you want? What do you want? And the way I love to do this is that we take turns and we write down everything. So I'll say something and then she says something. Then I'll say something and she says something. I'll say something. Now we get a long list. And we don't do any evaluation of the list until the entire list is complete. And then we go back through and evaluate the list. The advantage of this is that you don't squash any creativity. There is a point, of course, where you want to evaluate what each other wants, but only after you get it all out. Then we go through, and the way we evaluate is we prioritize it, which is that we give it an A, B, C, or X. Now, what an A is that, you know, that we each give it a score. So there's an A, that means we both promise to do it. We want it so bad we promise it. B, that means we plan to do it. We're going to put time and resources behind it. C means, okay, it's a possibility, be a good idea, but we may or may not. And then X means, no, we're not going to do that. And the way we operate is either person connects it off.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Martha.
Great.
Somebody else, go ahead, say your name and whatever you'd like as soon as you're off of mute.
Dave, it's Laurie.
Hi, Laurie.
Hi there. You know, one of the thoughts I had about this was being sensitive to where the inquiry is well received. Like, I've come across it where there is definitely a shutdown individual or individuals in my midst. And being sensitive, i.e. listening soulfully enough to know when that person just really doesn't want to go there, they want to stay stuck, they're preferring to stay stuck. They, you know, it's a tough one for me to witness when I have, of course, an agenda for them to have what they want in life. But I think it's really important to, at least from my experience and when I've banged my head against the wall, is to just be aware of this dynamic.
Yeah, good. Very good, Laurie. So sometimes you're asking people what do they want, and they really don't know, and they don't want to know, and they're not ready to know, and that's fine. So we don't need to press that. Thank you, Laurie. Go ahead, name and whatever you'd like to say.
Dave, this is Sandra Ellington from Texas.
Hi, Sandra.
Hi. In Texas, we're doing a pretty important project with senior leaders, the superintendents and their central office staffs, and one of the things that happens with that group of people is that they're generally pushed by other people's agendas, and so a lot of times they don't have an opportunity to speak about what they want, and in the process lose some of their identity, some of their energy and their creativity. And I'm getting ready to go coach a superintendent Thursday. And one of the things that I want to do is to help him, because he's an awesome leader, but to help him revisit his own creativity and looking at what he really wants in terms of his personal leadership and his professional leadership. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. I really like what you're saying about how when people are pushed by the agendas of others, They get to the point they don't even know what their own agenda is. So they really lose their ability to vision. They lose their ability to be clear about their motive. And when we don't know our motive, we lose our motivation. We lose our identity. We lose our creativity. Good job.
Right,
Connor.
And I think we lose that sense that you've taught us so much about it, looking at the whole person. We're not just, there's just not one dynamic about us. There are multiple dynamics.
Yeah. Yeah, so when you ask people, when you as a leader are assisting others to get clear, be sure that you ask them not only what they want, when, where, and with whom they want it, but in every area of life. Even though maybe you only lead in the business arena, or some of you lead in the nonprofit, or some of you are leading in their church, but even if you're leading in your church, don't just ask people what they want spiritually. Ask them what they want in their family, and in their work, and in their entertainment, and their finances. And if you're leading at work, don't just focus on work, but ask people what they want at home, and what they want in every domain of life. I have two more comments, then we're going to go on to another skill, which I think is really valuable for leadership and comes from coaching. But first, go ahead.
Pete, Dave, from San Francisco. Pete Chantanay. Dave, one of the things that I'm in the process of writing a business plan and exploring certain options. And one of the things that I'm inspired by are leaders in the world that have contributed in a way that they fill a void. And I think it kind of comes back to that point that you made, and I'm thinking of Steve Jobs specifically, since you know the iPhone has already been mentioned. I have an iPhone, and it's really an extraordinary piece of technology. And I wouldn't be surprised if you know Steve and his staff and Apple just generally, you know, had been listening to what customers wanted. And you know, it's even you and the different iterations in your work. You know, having done these workshops for so many years and now kind of gone into this realm of leadership, having come out of kind of the falling awake modality, and before falling awake, it was becoming a master student. And, you know, when we survey people, survey our customers, survey our staff, and we listen in a way, then we can serve kind of like in an evolutionary process. So as I'm writing this business plan, one of the things that I'm doing is kind of I'm in an inquiry and trying to figure out because what I'm writing is currently in existence, but I'm writing in a certain and unique way, in that the service that I'm offering is going to be slightly different than what is currently being offered, even though it's kind of being offered in its current form, if that makes sense. So I'm really excited about, you know, what you spoke as far as really listening to my students, listening to my clients, and then trying to develop a new form of what it is that I do to serve them.
Yeah, and what I'm recommending is a kind of listening where you're listening for desire. You're listening for what people want, and then you're feeding that back. So if you're listening to your customers, you're listening for what do you want, and then they're going to tell you a whole lot of things. They're going to tell you what's been great about your service, what's been wrong with your service. They're going to tell you about their Aunt Henrietta. And what you're listening for is whenever they tell you what you want, they want, and then you feed that back to them. Thanks. I'd like to listen to one more of you, and then we're going to go to the next skill.
Hey, Dave, this is Heidi Souza. How are you?
Hi, Heidi. Good.
When you were talking about the asking what people want, I realized that I'm really good at doing that and helping people clarify with those that I name as my coaching clients. And then I just came back from a conference dealing with alternative education, and the idea of calling that a leadership skill is helping me to think about, because I want to be some kind of leader, but in an unconventional way, dealing with educational transformation. And some of these folks that I've met are starting their own little experimental schools with more learner-centered approaches. Anyway, the idea of calling this process of asking what people want a leadership skill was really liberating to me. I was like, oh, wow, I don't have to have the answers. I don't have to, you know, figure out exactly what this new paradigm is and have it figured out. All I can just do is ask people what they want, and that can be drawing out their envisioning and then encouraging them and thinking of the word encouraging, like with a dash between and encouraging, that we're creating, enabling courage, their courage.
That's great. Thank you, Heidi. Good idea. Thank you. Yes. So how could you as a leader bring courage to more people? And I think that involves listening deeply to what they want. Now, let's go to the next skill, because after really assisting people to get clear about what they want, then I think a skill, of course, of a coach, and I believe a leader, is to then facilitate their action planning, to assist them to come up with multiple answers to their questions, multiple solutions to their problems, and multiple goals to reach their dreams. So the whole piece here of powerful leadership is assisting people to come up with multiple solutions or multiple answers or multiple action plans. How do you do this? Well, I'm recommending you start again with listening. And this time, when you feed back, you're not feeding back what they want. You're feeding back what you hear are their solutions. So you ask them, well, how would you solve this problem? Or how would you achieve this goal? And then you stop and you listen, and they'll say something, and then they'll say something else, and you keep listening. But what you're listening for now are action plans or solutions. And every time they come up with one, you polish it up and give it back to them. And then you listen some more. And then you take that one and you polish it up. You improve a little bit. You don't change it much, but you see if you can just make it even a little shinier than it was as far as a solution or a plan, and you give it back to them. You literally feed it back to them. And then you listen for another one. Now, often people will run out of things to say after one or two. So then you press a little. You say, well, give me some more. Those are two good ideas, but give me some more. And most people will say, I don't have any more. Then you just say, okay, well, let's think, though. Let's think together here. So what else could you do to solve this problem? Or what else could you do to reach this goal? I know you want this if for our organization or for our group here, for our family, for our friendship, and I know you want it, so what else could you do? And then they'll give you another one. And, of course, you listen and you polish it up and send it back to them. And then you ask, you push even a little harder. So you see if you can't get people to come up with 10 or even 20 solutions to the problem. Or 10 or 20 action plans to get the goal achieved. Now, once in a while, after you've listened and pressed and asked them, and then you maybe even add to the list of possibilities. But when you add to the list of possibilities for the people that you're leading, when they're trying to solve a problem or come up with an action plan, add several. Don't just add one. And sometimes even add ideas that are contradictory. Because you're not there to give them the answer. This is back to what Pete said earlier. I think that if you start to try and give people the answer, they begin to resist, and they won't keep with you. It's people want to come up with their own answers. Now, as a leader, of course, you want to tell people what you want. You want to tell people and see if you can convince them to want what you want and to devote time and energy for it. So great leaders communicate clearly what they want. But in terms of how to achieve it, they leave that loose. That's why I think as a leader, you want to, just like a coach, as a leader, you want to avoid giving people the answer. First of all, you probably don't even know the answer, even though if you think you do. But even if you're sure you know the answer, if you can wait a while until the person comes up with that answer that you think is the right answer, and then, like all the others, polish it up and give it back to them, they're way more likely to implement it than if you give it to them. I learned this initially when I started teaching a course for college students on how to be successful in college. Pete mentioned this earlier about that. It was one of the first books, or was the first book I wrote called Becoming a Master Student. and it was all about how to be effective in school, and it came from this course I taught. When I first started the course, I would tell students how to be good students, and it didn't work. They didn't do it. But when I asked them what they wanted and then asked them to develop ways to get it, and these ways to get it were really the same ideas that I had about how to be a great student, but they came up with the ideas themselves. Just what I ask you to do at the beginning of this call, I ask you to invent how you can be more effective as a leader. Yeah, on this call I've presented all kinds of ideas, but I'm certain that my ideas are not as good for you as the ideas you invent. That's why I keep pausing and asking you to write and think and come up with what you could do. Now, in this case, I'm talking about what you could do to assist people to develop detailed action plans or to assist people to solve problems. And what I'm recommending is that you not give them the answer because it takes away their responsibility and it takes away their creativity. But I'm recommending instead you ask them to come up with multiple answers, 10 to 20 answers, before they actually implement the plan. The strategy that I'm talking about, I reviewed much more fully in the first telecourse. So if any of you are interested in this, it's really a problem-solving system. You can go back and listen to that podcast. But now I want to stop and pause again like I had before and ask you to look in your leadership roles. Wherever you're taking leadership, some of you have been assigned it at work, so you take it. Some of you haven't been assigned it at work, but you take it anyway. Hooray for you. Some of you are leaders in your community or at home, but where have you been good at helping people problem solve and develop action plans? And where could you improve? That's the question. Where have you been good at it, and where could you improve at it? I'll be quiet for another 45 seconds, and during this time, even if you're listening to the recording, and of course if you're listening live, please take the time now and write the answers to those questions. Begin. All right, I'd like to hear from you. Say your first name or your first and last name and whatever else you'd like to say.
This is Joanne. And, Dave, a place where I've used a skill to really have people get clear about what it is that they want was using the tool that you gave us on the last call when you reminded us that we could use cards to put down topics, and then below that, three more topics, and then break it down and break it down and break it down like a org chart. And I used that four different times this week. And it's one of the old tools that we used for years and years, and I've really forgotten about it. And for people that are visual, it really works. And one of the most important was I have a friend who right now has a very challenging health situation in her life, and she was able to get very clear and get unstuck because she was so overwhelmed. And when she was able to break it down, it was really accessible to her. So that's a place that I'm using it really well.
Thanks, Joanne. On this last call that Joanne's referring to, and you can listen to it on the podcast, I went through this in detail about how to have ask somebody, well, how could you do that? And then divide that into, well, how could you do that? And then, well, how could you do that? And it develops this organizational chart. And it's this kind of skill that I recommend you all use in your leadership. Thanks, Joanne. Somebody else, raise your hand electronically with *61. Question is, where are you using this skill of helping people with problem solving or coming up with action plans? Where are you using it now, or where could you use it? Go ahead. Go ahead.
My home phone was on mute. This is from California.
Hi.
And, hi. Where I'm using this is at work. Our office for 25 years has been spread over 5 different offices over town, and we are consolidating now. And so there's lots of really big changes and some position cuts, and people are really freaking out. And one by one, most of them seem to make it to my office to talk about their upsets and concerns and their little issues between each other and what do they do. And so I'm using that skill to get them to figure out what to do and how to change the interaction so that they and other people are more comfortable.
Well, congratulations, because I think that that's a great use of your office time. And I'm really, I think it says a lot about you that people will come and seek you out and do that. And what I want to emphasize here for all of you is when people come and are problem solving, ask them to go for lots and lots of solutions before they implement any of them. Next person, go ahead.
This is Pam again. I've been really proud of myself for making, you know, some big successes. But I think I'm just a fall down on my face failure at doing this. And I just realized why. Because I still have connected with helping or being a good person or being supportive as, you know, kind of getting attached to the best answer. It doesn't have to be my answer, but of course often it is, right? And so I remember when you taught us in the class that there's a difference between advice, which is prescriptive, and the creative way of allowing it to kind of unfold and having them discover it. So I'm just confessing my incredible weakness in this area and just recommitting to wanting to get this.
Thanks, Pam. I think that's how we get it all. That's how we always learn a new skill, is recognizing when we're not doing it and then committing to learning that new skill. And in this case, we have, most of us, a training that says we're most useful if we give an answer. And I believe that the opposite is true, that we're most useful when we facilitate answer creation. One more comment, and then I'll go on to the next skill.
Dave, this is Susan Hayward, and this actually may be going into the next skill, but what I'm thinking for myself is that I do this very well in a lot of situations, but where I don't do it so well and I would like to improve is when I'm working with other people, especially right now family members, around issues of reconciliation, and there's a lot of emotion, there's anger, there's bitterness, there's fear. And how to get rid of the emotion so that they can be open to coming up with possible solutions.
Yeah. Well, it does move really well into the next, because it's mediating relationship struggles, and that's what a coach does, and that's what I know that most leaders do when they're effective leaders. And because in every group that you're leading, there are going to be relationship problems. There's going to be conflict and turmoil. There's going to be anger, bitterness, and fear. And what Susan asks is, well, what do you do to mediate that when there are those emotions? And my first recommendation is that you let the emotion out. You let people have their emotion in a safe, secure place, where they won't be judged or analyzed, criticized, but where they can actually have that emotion. Now, generally, that's not with the person that they are mad or angry or bitter about initially. Certainly, there's a time for expressing our emotion to the person where we are projecting they are the cause. Because most of us, when we have emotion, we think the other person caused it. I mean, we're angry because of them. We're bitter because of what they did. We're fearful because of that. So we have these emotions, and very few people have learned to own those emotions, so we project the source. So whatever that source of the emotion is, eventually you might want to communicate the emotion to this, what you perceive as the source. But in the beginning, to mediate relationship struggles, ask people to express those emotions somewhere other than where they think they are sourced. So if I'm mad at somebody, I can express the madness, but not first with that person. First, I want to get the upset out. So we start with that anger, that emotion release in a safe environment with the person who is not the perceived source. Next, we insist as a leader on communication. Face-to-face whenever possible, supplemented with written communication. But I think face-to-face, particularly in times of struggle, because written communication is so easy to misunderstand the intent of when there's high emotion. And then, to get people to fairly communicate. The way that I like to mediate problems as a leader is just to get people to sit down and pass the truth stick. Now, in other words, just some kind of a symbol where they pass it back and forth so that you encourage this kind of communication. And then to encourage that sending back, which is what I think you are saying is. So particularly when emotion is high and there's a relationship struggle, you as a leader encourage that feedback loop where each person says after the other speaks, well, what I think you are saying is, what I think you are saying is X. And now the other person very often is going to come back and say, no, that's not what I'm saying. And if they say that, don't let there be an argument. Rather, let the person clarify it, because often people say something, but when they hear it sent back to them, they realize that's not what they meant. Now, what they sometimes say is, that's not what I said. But what they mean is, that not what I meant to say. So you as a leader are looking for ways that you can apply relationship or coaching strategies, and in this case, mediating relationships. A couple of other ideas here is that you want to start with common ground. So when you're mediating a struggle between two people, start asking them to talk about where they do agree. Eventually, of course, you're going to get to the disagreement, but start with common ground. And keep your focus there, because many people that disagree, they're maybe disagreeing only 20% of the time. But because that's all they talk about, it feels like they totally disagree with each other. It's one thing that I've loved about the presidential debates recently, and particularly in the two parties, but even now when the Republicans debate the Democrats, there's so much that they agree about. And finally, they've been willing now to speak that. And that, to me, is great leadership. When you can get others around you to focus on their common ground and not just on where they disagree. Well, I realize that we're out of time. There was only two more skills that I wanted to talk about. One was celebrating, which I encourage you to bring constantly into your leadership. It's one that we encourage people to constantly bring into their coaching. And by just looking for celebrations and sending them back to people when they talk, as a leader, you go around constantly catching other people doing their job well. So you bring in that celebrating. And then, as the leader, you are continually confident in the people you lead and their ability to do their job. Just like you as a coach are continually confident in people's ability to get in touch with what they want, create action plans to achieve it, and achieve it. Well, those are some of the coaching skills, some of the ones that I think are most important to bring into leadership. And thanks for being on this call. I encourage you to join the fourth in this series. The next time we talk, we're going to talk about it. It's going to be in 2 weeks from tonight. So please mark that on your calendar. The topic will be work-life balance. And now, of course, I realize that work is part of your life, but the way we talk about that is, what can you do as a leader, as a worker, to ensure that your work is well-balanced with your non-work part of your life, and that you live a joyful life while contributing, that you are contributing at home as well as in the community and at work, that you're enjoying yourself when you're working as well as when you're not working. So there's a real balance there. That's going to be the focus of our next call. I also want to remind you that we're going to do a workshop. I'm going to do a workshop on leadership in October. If you're interested in that, please get in touch with Bill Rentz or Joanne Bangs. Love to have you attend. That's October 26th, 27th, and 28th. You can also find out about that by going to DaveEllisLeadership.com. And before we leave here, though, I want to give you Bill Rentz's phone number and Joanne Bang's number, because they're available right after this call. They're also available most days between 8 and 5. So you can contact them to see if you're interested in attending the workshop. Joanne Bang's number is 605-390-2275. And Bill Rentz's number is 605-390-2343. Thanks a lot for being on the call and for listening to the call, and I look forward to being with you next time. Good night.